under the old healthcare system, rural folks paid more out-of-pocket expense than anybody else in America. They had less access to basic healthcare than anyone else in America. They had higher levels of uninsured than other places in the country, and the result was they had poor outcomes. So with the Affordable Care Act, we now have an opportunity for rural Americans to join with millions of other Americans to get expanded preventative care screenings, tests and screenings that will help them detect earlier illnesses and diseases. There are a lot of senior population in rural areas is quite high, and seniors are benefiting specifically from this preventative screening and test opportunity. There are young adults who are now covered under their parents' policy that weren't before. The drug costs are lower for seniors. The uninsured population is declining, and I think as folks learn more about this, they're going to find that they can get less affordable, or less costly, rather, insurance coverage through the Affordable Care Act.
The latest figures I have for Montana show about half of those who are eligible are now enrolled, and of course time is running out. Is there any consideration of extending the deadline to get those people on?
Well, I don't think it's they're focused on extending the deadline. I think it's right now we're making sure that folks know that they have just a little bit over a month to get signed up. March 31 is the deadline. They can go on healthcare.gov and basically take a look at the options that they have, price out those options. And I think some folks might be surprised to find that they can get health insurance for as little as $100 a month.
I want to switch now away from healthcare and talk to you a little bit about the latest census figures on farming in this country. And as you know, Secretary Vilsack, we have an aging farm population. I think the latest statistics show that there are three times as many farmers over the age of 65 as under the age of 25. How worrisome is that?
Well, I think there are obviously some key concerns that were identified and addressed in the census. We actually are seeing an increase in farmers under the age of 35 years of age by virtue of the census. We've seen a slight increase over other census figures from previous census, and that's a good indicator. That's a good sign. We obviously have to continue that. I think the deepest concern that I have is what I'll refer to as sort of the eroding middle in agriculture, the middle-sized and medium-sized operations, the middle-aged farmers. We're seeing significant decreases in their numbers, which is a concern. The question is, who will be farming the land? Who will be providing this affordable and accessible food that we've grown accustomed to in the United States if we don't continue to attract more young people? So the key here, I think, from the census that I take is the need to really focus on diversity and innovation, diversity in terms of crops that are raised and market opportunities that can be created in the people who will do the farming. We saw an increase in Hispanic farmers. We've seen an increase in American Indian and Asian farmers, Asian American farmers. So we obviously want to increase that opportunity, diversity in land use, and innovation in terms of research, how we might be able to continue to be more productive as we face some challenging weather circumstances and climate change. How are we going to be able to address that? So the census is an important document, and we have, I think, justifiable reasons to be concerned about the aging nature of the farming population. But I think there are strategies that have been incorporated in the recently passed Farm Bill that will help us begin the process of expanding opportunities for those new and beginning farmers.
You mentioned climate change, and of course one of the impacts of climate change is that the amount of agricultural land in production is shrinking. California is, of course, a prime example of that, the terrible drought there. And you've pointed out before that in 40 years, we're going to have to increase agriculture by 70% globally to feed the world. And we'll be doing that with less land available, correct?
Well, less potentially less land and certainly more intense weather patterns and a unforgiving climate from time to time. One of the benefits from doing a census every 5 years is to track trends. And one trend that we are beginning to see diminish a bit is this conversion of agricultural land for other purposes. While we lost acreage from the last census, it was not quite as steep and not as many acres as we have lost in previous census. So I think that trend is slowing down, which is good. We want to be able to preserve as much farmland as we possibly can, and it gets back to this whole notion of innovation, being able to do the research, create new ways to produce products with less inputs, with less reliance on chemicals and pesticides, and with less water. And I think there are new seed technologies and new ways of irrigation that will allow us to do a better job and continue to be more productive. But it's not just America that's got that responsibility. It's also our global trading partners and agricultural partners in other parts of the world. They, too, have to pick up the pace.
And, of course, another impact of climate change and one of great concern to those of us who live in the West is the increasing number of wildfires. One recent statistic that came out is that wildfires will grow by 50 to 100% in the Western U.S. And I think over the last decade, we've already spent $3.5 billion to fight fires. President Obama has come out with a new proposal this week to pay for that firefighting out of a special disaster account. And that would be very helpful, would it not?
It would, and we clearly have seen a longer fire season. It's one of the reasons why we established climate change hubs to focus not only on agriculture but also on the impact of changing climates on the forests and how we might be able to determine better ways to mitigate and adapt to the changing climate. But to be able to do that, you have to have the resources to make your forests more resilient. You have to do more work to restore your forests, to thin them out to the proper way, to make sure you don't have hazardous fuel buildup that we've seen over the decades now, exacerbated by pine bark beetle and other infestations linked to warmer weather. To do that, we have to stop paying to fight fires from our general operating budget and our maintenance budget and begin treating forest fires as we do tornadoes, floods, and other natural disasters. And what the president has proposed and what Senator Wyden and Senator Crapo have proposed is a way to do that, in which we wouldn't be robbing the maintenance and restoration budget of the Forest Service. We'd be able to have greater predictability and certainty in that budget, which would allow us to do more work and hopefully over time reduce the risk of these more intense and very devastating fires.
And that appears to have bipartisan support at this point. It looks pretty hopeful.
It does, and I think it's a very important point to make, that when you look at American agriculture and American forest lands, they basically are a net carbon sink at this point in time. If you take all of our agriculture, all of our forested lands, it's about a 9% carbon sink, which is unusual for other aspects of the economy, obviously, are creating greenhouse gases. We want to maintain that positive aspect, but if our forests are going to burn up in devastating fires, we'll see those numbers reverse, and we'll be adding instead of subtracting from the greenhouse gases that we have to deal with. So it's in our long-term best interest. It's certainly in our economic best interest to figure out ways in which we can do a better job of restoring our forests and then figuring out additional market opportunities for that wood. It may not be high-valued wood that we're taking out of those forests, so we may be able to convert it into fuel, into energy, into new bio-based products that are being developed at the Forest Products Lab and in universities across the country. So it's an opportunity. It's a big challenge, but it's also an opportunity to diversify the Western economy.
Any doubt in your mind, Secretary Vilsack, that climate change is the environmental challenge of our time?
Well, I know there are a lot of environmental challenges, but I think it has the greatest potential impact on every aspect of our economy. If you're a coastal state or city, you obviously are concerned about rising sea levels. But if you're in the interior of the country, you're concerned about whether the fire season is going to continue to grow and become more intense. You're concerned about whether you're going to have adequate resources to be able to grow the crops that you've been growing in the past and be able to support your family as a result. If you're a livestock producer, you're wondering whether there'll be adequate forage. And if you're living in a city or town that is dependent on groundwater and surface water for drinking water, you're obviously going to be deeply concerned about the lack of water that currently is in many of the reservoirs and storage facilities throughout the West. So it is a big deal, and fortunately, we're beginning to take action. We've seen some progress in the last 4 or 5 years under this president. But there's a lot more to do, and I think what we're doing at USDA, pursuant to the President's Climate Action Plan, is stepping up, and we're going to be doing the research and trying to focus on solutions for folks so that they can reduce greenhouse gases, they can mitigate the impact, and hopefully adapt to things that can't be mitigated.
We have been speaking with Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack. Mr. Secretary, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to talk about these issues with us.
Happy to do it. Take care.